The Debate.
Struck a Saudi Aramco oil distribution facility in the Red Sea city of Jeddah. Now, this is considered a major achievement for the Ansarullah fighters who accused Saudi Arabia of waging an uneven war against them. In this edition of The Debate, we will look at why Saudi Arabia is continuing a war that it is losing, and whether it can even continue this war when it is dealing with an economic downturn to support a very expensive MBS adventure.
The Yemeni army says it has fired a winged Qut 2-type missile that has struck a Saudi Aramco oil company distribution station in the kingdom's Red Sea city of Jeddah.
The strike was very accurate, and ambulances and fire engines rushed to the target.
The army spokesman described the attack as a response to Saudi crimes and aggression against Yemen. He warned foreign companies working in Saudi Arabia to exercise caution as operations against the kingdom's interests will continue. This is not the first time that the Aramco facilities have come under Yemeni attacks. In September 2019, the Yemeni military claimed responsibility for strikes on Saudi oil plants that knocked out more than half of the kingdom's output. The Yemenis say such retaliatory attacks are to push Saudi Arabia to end its devastating war on the impoverished nation that began in March 2015. The onslaught has killed tens of thousands of Yemeni people, many of them women and children. According to the United Nations, Yemen is faced with the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, with nearly 80% of the country's population in need of humanitarian assistance, including more than 12 million children. Nonetheless, calls from rights groups and world bodies for an end to the Saudi aggression have fallen on deaf ears in Riyadh. Advocacy groups such as Human Rights Watch have documented evidence of war crimes in Yemen, calling on Western countries to stop arms sales to Riyadh. They argue that the weaponry is being used in the war in Yemen, where civilians are bearing the brunt of the kingdom's military campaign. Saudi Arabia triggered the Yemen conflict with the purported aim of restoring the former government of Abd Rabbu Mansur Hadi to power and ousting the Ansarullah movement. But years of deadly war and crippling blockade have failed to bring the Yemeni resistance movement to its knees. On the contrary, it has made significant progress in developing weapons to carry out retaliatory attacks. Now the kingdom, having failed to achieve its goals on the battlefield, finds itself caught between a rock and a hard place. On the one hand, Saudi Arabia could suffer irreparable harm from the Yemenis if the war lasts further, while on the other hand, the kingdom regards it a disgrace to end its campaign without achieving any of its military objectives.
Joining us for this edition of The Debate, former U.S. diplomat in Saudi Arabia, Michael Springman, joins us from Washington, D.C. We have activist and political commentator Hossein Abulqaiti, who joins us from Sana'a. I'd like to welcome you both. Hossein Abulqaiti, let me first start with you and get a reaction from you. You're looking at a missile that has struck the Saudi Aramco oil distribution facility. And what is very significant about this fact, aside from where it has struck, is that this is some 600 kilometers or 370 miles from the frontier. So it's really quite an achievement in terms of the depth of where this missile hit, which is the distribution facility.
Yes, I mean, this exactly show you that here Sana'a forces are actually capable of sending those type of missile deep inside Saudi Arabia. We remember that on the attack that have targeted the Baqiq oil field and as well the pumping, the oil pipe pumping station north of Saudi Arabia and Yanbu', those area actually are much far than Jeddah, but still Saudi Arabia sometimes they deny that those type of missile maybe will come from Yemen as they did after the Baqiq oil field attack. But at the same time, they are actually recognized that some attack on Riyadh and as well on Yanbu', which is are more far, they are from Yemen. And I think this show you that Yemeni are well equipped to conduct those type of attack and as well to attack one of the largest city in Saudi Arabia, which is Jeddah and which is in the Red Sea, after an attack that was conducted 2 weeks ago by explosive boats against as well a floating oil facility in Jizan port. This show you that Yemeni now are actually will start a new stage by targeting Saudi main oil infrastructure in the Red Sea. And I think if you let me may, they want to send four messages to Saudi Arabia. We know that there was a meeting between Netanyahu and Bombay and bin Salman. This is a message actually directly by naming this missile, Scud, missile. This means a message to the Zionist state that Yemeni are standing behind the Palestinian, and as well to have this new missile enter the surface. This means as well that Yemeni army are well equipped and they will upgrade their weapons and they are ready to defend the country for many, many months or years to come. And as well is a message to Bombay and the United States for all this threat that Trump might put Ansarullah in the list, on the so-called blacklist. Sana'a is like saying, we don't care. That's why they targeted Jeddah. At the time, there was news that there was yesterday a meeting between Netanyahu and Bombay, as well Mohammed bin Salman.
So do you think, Michael Springman, that is true, that this in a sense and in a way is a message directed at not only Mohammed bin Salman, but also Netanyahu, and of course the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, that you know, this is what we're capable of doing, and also in particular the U.S., who has threatened to put the Ansarullah fighters on a terrorism list.
Yeah, I think it's exactly right that it is sending a message, a very loud and a very clear message, because Jeddah is the Manhattan of Saudi Arabia. It's the former port city that most of the people doing the Hajj travel through, and they still use the airport behind Jeddah and near where the attacks took place with that missile, and that shows that they can reach out to one of the higher ranking cities in the country, the bread and butter, the money, the finance, and so forth in Saudi Arabia, and they can touch them. And I heard from Nasser Shaka this morning on the earlier report he had done for Press TV that people were running around the explosion site, people from Jeddah, the native Saudis and the expatriates, of which there are many there, taking photographs, taking motion pictures with iPhones and whatever, to record this and pass it around the kingdom and to their friends and abroad. I tried reaching out to contacts in Jeddah earlier today and failed, unfortunately, asking what their impression of this was. But I definitely think that it's not only a message to Pompeo, it's a message to Biden, and it should be he be confirmed as president on December 14th, because he's appointed Anthony Blinken, a Jew, according to the Washington Post, as Secretary of State. And Jews in American government support Israel more than they support the American government. Sigal Pearl Schalker, who had been Under Secretary of the Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, Sigal Pearl Mandel, I'm sorry. She was born and raised in Israel, yet her loyalty was there, and she was supposedly an American citizen, supposedly working for the interests of the American government. So yeah, they're telling the Americans loud and clear, stay out of this.
Hossein Abu Ghaiti, you know, this is not the first time that Saudi Arabia's most important asset and treasured asset has been targeted. We're looking at the second time, and overall, Saudi Arabia has been targeted with dozens of ballistic missiles and drone attacks since the start of the year. So if I'm sitting in Riyadh and I'm watching my most important asset be targeted, this being the second time, I would think twice about pursuing this war, because it may be a recurrence, as we're seeing it happen. Why does Saudi Arabia then in turn follow through on this war? Obviously, it's a very costly war, but it continues this war. It's 5 years old now. What are they getting out of it?
To be honest with you, I think we can to somehow blame the Sana'a government here, because most of the time after any major attack like on Bakig and any other area, we see that Yemenis here in Sana'a always like putting new like offers to Saudi Arabia to stop its war. I believe if Sana'a will come to a decision that Saudi does not actually want any peace in Yemen. They only want to protect their country, despite the fact that they are funding many terrorist group and militia here to fight Yemeni. So if Sana'a will take that decision for to continue the attack, not to stop, they should not be actually patient with Saudi Arabia. We have seen Saudi Arabia many times. Yemen offered to stop all its war against Saudi Arabia in exchange of stopping their airstrike and lifting the blockade. The blockade is actually killing hundreds of thousands of Yemenis. Millions of Yemenis are in urgent need of food. That's why I think, as I said, some blame is coming to Sana'a. And there is one more important as well about this latest attack. It's as well a direct message to the Saudi regime that, you still think that the Red Sea will stay a safe haven for you to export your oil, maybe to avoid the Persian Gulf. As long as you are in war against Yemen, a blockade against Yemen, this means that Saudi Arabia actually is threatened the important shipping lane in the Red Sea, because they are using that shipping lane by sending their destroyer and sending their warship to have a blockade in Yemen. And by this attack, actually, I think that Yemenis are saying that they are actually well equipped to close this shipping lane, especially after the attack on Jaizan with these two explosive boats. I just want to remind you that 3 years ago, a Yemeni army has actually used the same type of this boat, targeting Saudi Al-Madina brigade. And you can imagine how strong that brigade is well equipped to defend itself, so it could not actually defend itself against this boat. That means that Saudi ships are actually in danger if they continue their war against Yemen.
Well, Michael Springman, our guest says that somehow the approach that the Yemeni army has and the central government has in Yemen shouldn't be so that they commit such an important attack and then subscribe to having negotiations or having some kind of resolve, perhaps, that it should not go through with that because Saudi Arabia has broken its promises. And he has said that Saudi Arabia supports groups within Yemen to fight against the Yemeni army. There have been talks in the past of reconciliation. Prisoner exchanges have also happened, but nothing has come out of it. Why are there not major strides being made when it comes to the political front of this war?
Mohammed bin Salman and the people around him are basically stupid and arrogant and are probably some of the narcissists. They think the world revolves around them and all they do is need to do is raise an eyebrow and something will be done. Unfortunately, they don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. All they see is more tunnel, and it's like digging a hole. After a while, you should stop digging. But unfortunately, they won't do it. Don't count the cost and their arrogance. They figure someone else will pay. The Saudis will get taxed. The average citizen will lose his stipend for necessities such as bread and gasoline and whatever. The prices are going to go up to them, and have in fact gone up in the past. So they won't stop until it's really rubbed in their face. If the Americans, for example, thought it was too dangerous to deal with Saudi Arabia, something might happen. For example, if the Yemenis dropped a couple of these missiles onto airports after issuing a notice to airmen saying, you land in Jeddah, you land in Riyadh at your own peril, and break up the runways and smash a few hangars and repair facilities, I think people would be not terribly inclined to go to Saudi Arabia. And the Americans might be inclined, at least the American government might be inclined, to stop the sales of weapons to keep the war in Yemen going.
Well, Senator Bukhiti, so you said that somehow the Sana'a government is at fault because they follow through with or commit such an important attack, but yet they become a little open to perhaps negotiations. So if you were running the government in Sana'a, how would you approach this whole situation?
To be honest with you, I mean, clearly since the day that the United Nations, as an example, has taken Saudi Arabia from a list for killing children, even though the name of Ansar al-Houthi is in that list, they have done that, the United Nations, twice. And on the third report, they actually thanked Saudi Arabia for being more careful not to target kids. Yemeni government actually at that time, they should actually cut ties with the United Nations. They should not have met with the UN envoy to Yemen at that time, or this the current one, because this shows you that the United Nations actually is biased. And because Saudi threatened to cut the fund, it's like bribing and blackmailing the United Nations. And United Nations, for them, is okay for Saudi to kill Yemenis and to kill hundreds of thousands of starving Yemeni kids. But it's okay as well to take money from Saudi Arabia, as they say, to save another children. Those stand actually should be made really, really strong. And after the attack, as an example, on Baqi, which have actually knocked down 50% of Saudi oil. Just can you imagine if they have, for example, targeted Ras Tanura port in the Persian Gulf, which actually export 95% of Saudi chemical and oil and fuel to outside. If they have done those two steps, one step after the other, one without offering any peace to Saudi Arabia, I'm sure that the United Nations and the UK, and especially the United States, will actually try to stop this war, because they are making profit from this war. When they see that the Saudi is losing their oils, their economy can be collapsed. This means that they're going to lose one of their strongest allies in the region, and they cannot give the money for this weapons. I believe it will be really, really simple. If there is no profit from this war will end soon.
Michael Springman, we do have to talk about this as much as it is repeated. But, you have these countries that are selling weapons to Saudi Arabia, the major one being the United States. We also have France and the UK. I mean, I am sure these countries and their officials realize they have blood on their hands. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves, the humanitarian situation as a result of this war that has worsened, making it one of the worst humanitarian conditions that a country has in the world. But do you think, at least on the part of the U.S., if you have Biden be confirmed, that it's going to think twice about its approach to this war? Many hoping that the U.S. is going to end its role and then maybe even restore humanitarian aid, or is that just a pipe dream?
Well, I think it's more hope than anything else. There's an awful lot of hope in a change of administration if, in fact, Joe Biden is confirmed on December 14th. Until the Americans start paying the price, either in image or in losing the military training mission headquartered in various places in Saudi Arabia, and port visits by American warships to Saudi ports, I think that it's going to continue. The Americans are going to ignore what's going on in Yemen because they can sell weapons to the Saudis and increase the bottom line of big American corporations and presumably preserve jobs in the midst of this virus hysteria where they just about shut down the American economy from coast to coast. So I think the Americans are going to keep on with it. Certainly, Biden is not opposed to this. He keeps talking about how the Saudis should be treated as pariahs, but I have not seen anything concrete coming out of him saying definitely on the day after I'm sworn in as president, I will end all of American arms sales to Saudi Arabia. I put restrictions on visas for Saudis coming to the United States. And I will sanction Saudi companies. I will sanction Saudi Aramco. I will sanction Saudi government officials. We'll start seizing Saudi princes' airplanes if they enter American airspace, that kind of thing. That might achieve something. But until then, it's basically going to be more of the same, I'm afraid.
Well, Senator Bukhati, another aspect to this war, which some say is a war within a war, is the rift that exists between Saudi Arabia and the UAE. Maybe you can explain that to us, where it stands now. It's been going on for quite some time and involves the southern front where the port of Aden is located.
To be honest with you, I don't think there is any rift between Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates, because we know that those two countries, actually, we say in Yemen, they are a tool of the Zionist state, a tool of U.S. policy in the region. So, it will be really hard to believe that when they started this war, they joined this war all together with all the support from the United States, United Kingdom, and France, that they now are could not actually force the group that they are fighting under their command to sit together and not to fight each other and to focus the fight on Ansarullah, the Houthi. The main reason is a UK policy since the occupation of Yemen or other region by Britain is divide and conquer, because those two countries actually does not want to have a united Yemen. They want to split Yemen, and as well the south of Yemen, they want to split it into groups. So Yemenis will keep fighting even in that region against each other, while United Arab Emirates is actually focusing on Bab al-Mandab, on all the island in there, as well on Socotra Island, which there are news that Israel will have a base in there. And on the other hand, we see Saudi Arabia is focusing on Al-Mahra region and on Hadramaut region, because there are plans that Saudi Arabia want to install an oil pipeline, because the United States policy think that if they're going to come to any war with Iran in the future, they need to be in control of those areas under the control of United Arab Emirates, like Bab al-Mandab and Socotra Island. And as well, Saudi Arabia might build this oil pipeline to avoid the Persian Gulf. That's why those tools actually cannot lose the goal or go out of the goal or the target that was set to them by the United States and UK. And I just want to add one more thing very quickly. Everybody should believe either Sana'a government, that either it's Biden or Trump, the U.S. policy is one. We remember that the war in Yemen was actually announced from Washington by Saudi ambassador in there, and United States, the White House, under Trump, Obama administration, has released a statement supporting this war, and they said we will be behind Saudi Arabia in this war. And it was Obama who actually received the Nobel Peace Prize. That's why it's all the same policy, and Saudis right. and United Arab Emirates is just a tool of that.
Thank you. Let me thank our guest, former U.S. diplomat in Saudi Arabia, Michael Springman, and activist and political commentator, Hossein Al-Bukhaiti. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Kavita Lees, goodbye until next time.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan letter C, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll discuss the 22nd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Hajj, or Pilgrimage. Before moving on, let's just listen to some verses of this chapter, and we'll be back with you. Stay with us.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
إن الله يدافع عن الذين آمنوا. إن الله لا يحب كل خوان كفور.
Indeed, Allah defends those who have believed. Indeed, Allah does not like everyone treacherous and ungrateful.
So, the verse under discussion was the 38th verse of this chapter, chapter Hajj. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُدَافِعُ عَنِ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُحِبُّ كُلَّ خَوَّارٍ كَفُورٍ. Verily, Allah will defend those who believe, and Allah does not love any treacherous, ungrateful. So, in the beginning part of the verse, we concluded in the previous programs that the ones who are among the believers, the ones who have believed, have the support of the Almighty Allah with them. And it is not just for this time, it is permanent. And because they support and defend the limits of Allah, Allah will defend them as well. And we understood that the secret of attracting the Almighty Allah's defense, to have Him as our support, is to be from the believers. But in the next part, the Almighty Allah says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُحِبُّ كُلَّ خَوَّانٍ كَفُورٍ. Verily, Allah does not love any treacherous, ungrateful. Now, upon the meaning of these two words, these treacherous, ungrateful are the ones who associated partners with the Almighty Allah. And even at the time of saying Labbaik, maybe they declared the names of idols. So they were involved in difficulties in this world and hereafter. And the reason is, they didn't have the support of the Almighty Allah. And not only that, but also the Almighty Allah said, I do not love them. As it was mentioned before, one of the promises of Allah, and actually one of the laws and sunan of the Almighty Allah, is the divine succor and defense for believers, and He has enjoined this defense and support as a right upon Himself, where He has said, and helping the believers is ever incumbent upon us. In the 47th verse of chapter Rum, وَكَانَ حَقَّنَ عَلَيْنَا نَصْرُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. Helping the believers is ever incumbent on us. And the fact concerning divine defense and help is not always a defense and help at once and in short period, but it envelops a defense for a very long time too. Because in some other verses of the Holy Quran, He says, and the end is best for the pious ones. والعاقبة للمتقين.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine.
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran. By Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So anyway, the Quranic words khawan and kafur mean someone whose manner and the way of life is blasphemy and treachery. Anyway, the Almighty Allah is saying that the Almighty Allah does not love any kind of khawan. La yuhibbu kulla khawan. Khawan is khawan. The one who is treacherous, and there is no difference in the kind of treachery or the person who is doing so, because this treachery will lead to being ungrateful. And you know the true meaning of being khawan, the true meaning of treachery, is to believe in other than the Almighty Allah, to believe in other than the 14 infallibles. Because in this holy verse, khawan is mentioned as the opposite side of iman, and that helps us understand the true meaning of khawan in this case. So the criterion we should have for our loves and our hatreds must be upon something very real, something the religion has taught us. So we love the one who has iman, we love the ones who are the believers, and we hate the ones who are the treacherous. And it is possible that in a conflict or war, the believers are being defeated apparently, but their doctrine and their goal will be victorious, and that will remain forever. The example of which could be said that Ibn Muljam, he killed Hazrat Ali alayhi salam, but whom did Allah support, Ali or Ibn Muljam? Ali's name, Ali's offspring, Ali's book, and Ali's supplication, and his doctrine, and the followers of Ali alayhi salam have finally won this battle. We should never turn our backs on the religion, because then we would be called treacherous, and this would lead to being ungrateful. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech from IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Muhammad Ali Javdan. Please stay tuned. The true meaning of patience is when someone shows enmity towards you, but you have no grudge in your heart towards him. Patience is when you can take revenge when someone did something bad to you, but you forgive him. Patience is when you control yourself and do not disclose the secrets of a person who damaged you. Now, patience means that you even do not refer to a single detail of somebody who did something bad to you. There is also a situation in which someone else comes to you and talks unfavorably about a person who did something bad to you. If you control yourself and do not talk also unfavorably about that person, then you can be called a patient person. This is how we stop the fire of grudge and revenge inside ourselves. This is how we stop our souls from being fired. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Muhammad Ali Javdan. To find out more about this program and our other programs, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en/Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care, and goodbye.
Around the world with reporters.
Israel launched airstrikes in the early hours of Sunday on the Gaza Strip, causing damage to surrounding areas, but no casualties reported. Israel claims the airstrikes targeted Hamas positions and came in response to a rocket fired from Gaza toward the southern city of Ashkelon, the second time in 2 weeks.
Israel is not committed to its responsibilities, refusing to allow in the required ventilators for the enclave amid the coronavirus pandemic. The resistance front preserves the right to give a crushing response to those violations.
The Palestinian groups say they will continue their resistance as long as Israel is imposing its crippling blockade over the impoverished enclave, especially amid the coronavirus pandemic and the shortage of medical equipment and ventilators.
It is the resistance movement's duty to defend Palestinians against the Israeli aggression under any condition. Israel should be held accountable for the deterioration of the Palestinians' lives. This is a crime against Gazans.
Observers say Israel's refusal to meet the basic needs of Palestinians increases the possibility of further escalation.
The ongoing conflict comes as a result of Israel's suffocating siege on the Gaza Strip over the past 14 years. Palestinians won't remain silent. Through strikes like the recent ones, Israel is seeking to cover up its internal problems.
Israel has been conducting similar strikes on Gaza Strip over the past months.
The resistance groups here stress they are ready for any possible escalation, and the resistance will go on until the crippling siege on the Gaza Strip is broken. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
With almost 100,000 children under the age of 5 at risk of dying, Yemen slides into a dire situation. Here lies the 9-month-old Munir struggling to survive a severe malnutrition.
This is my son Munir. We've been here for a week. We want to treat him for malnutrition, and God helps us. We're resisting this savage war.
The ongoing war and siege imposed by Saudi Arabia has brought a severe famine described by the UN as the worst humanitarian crisis in the world.
There is an increase in malnutrition cases. Yemeni children are suffering from malnutrition in all governorates, and we receive 50 to 60 cases per day. There is a shortage of medical equipment like CT scanners.
The UN's former humanitarian coordinator for Yemen described the country's food security status as catastrophic. Now, a UN analysis shows that the coronavirus pandemic, economic problems, and the war have pushed malnutrition the highest levels in some parts of the country. According to the UN study, malnutrition has risen 15% among children under the age of 5 this year.
We condemn and denounce the continued international silence about the blockade imposed on Yemen and the failure to take any measures against the Saudi coalition, which has exacerbated human suffering, especially for children.
Millions of children in Yemen could be pushed out of starvation by the end of the year as the humanitarian crisis is compounded by the ongoing war and the blockade, along with the pressure of funding shortage as the world grapples with the coronavirus pandemic. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
A large number of people turned up in the garrison city of Rawalpindi near Pakistani capital Islamabad. These angry youngsters were outraged against India over its alleged unending brutalities against Muslims in disputed Kashmir region. So were they resentful against Israel for suppressing Muslims in the occupied Palestine.
Equally, these protesters are angry with the rulers of many Arab states over their alleged collaboration with India and particularly with Israel in strengthening their illegal hold of territories belonging to the Muslims. But it seems for these protesters, there is a leadership vacuum in the Muslim world.
This protest was organized by Youth Parliament, an organization of students of colleges and universities from all over Pakistan. they have been campaigning to forge greater unity among Muslims across their racial and sectarian profiling in regions. With greater unity among the ranks and files of Muslims, these students are struggling to bring an end to the atrocities being committed against Muslims by reviving the true spirit of Muslim nationhood all over the Islamic world.
We will never accept Israel. They are bombarding on the small children in the Palestine. They are Muslims. We are standing with them, and they are looking for the Pakistan, that they should come for the help for the Palestine.
The protesters sounded disappointed with the Prime Minister Imran Khan, who won last general elections partially with the pledge to pursue Muslim causes. Muslim causes in the world appears to be what matters to the common people in Pakistan. The lingering public resentment against France over repeated publication of blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet of Islam is yet another cause these students have been fighting for. This protest has followed gathering of millions of people on the streets of eastern city of Lahore a few days ago. Such a huge crowd emerged to attend the funeral of Khadim Hussain Rizvi, a religious and political leader who through his sustained protest forced Prime Minister Imran Khan last week to ink an agreement with his government to expel French ambassador and officially boycott French products in Pakistan. Javed Rana, Rawalpindi.
According to many independent institutions like Afghanistan's Independent Human Rights Commission, some Australian troops have committed crimes against humanity, such as intentionally killing civilians, since the beginning of America's longest war in Afghanistan back in 2001. A recent report on Australian forces' potential war crimes in Afghanistan has provoked reactions from Afghan institutions. Afghanistan's Human Rights Commission has condemned the killing of civilians by Australian troops and urged the prosecution of those responsible for the crimes. Afghanistan's Independent Human Rights Commission has dismissed as an inhuman move the killing of dozens of Afghan civilians by Australian troops.
Unfortunately, Australian forces have brutally killed civilians, including men, women and children in Uruzgan province. In fact, it proves that the lives of the Afghan women, men and children have no human value or dignity for them. Unfortunately, 39 civilians were killed by Australian forces during their 11 years presence in Afghanistan.
This comes as experts believe there is not much optimism that independent investigations would be launched, even at the International Criminal Court, into the case of killing of Afghan civilians by Australian troops.
Although grounds are available to probe the case by the International Criminal Court, interference and pressure by certain powers have created serious obstacles in the way of launching investigations into war crimes in Afghanistan.
Based on a recent report released by the United Nations Assistance Mission in Afghanistan, more than 32,000 civilians were killed and around 60,000 others, including women and children, were injured over the last decade. That is why the UN body also believes it's time to put an end to this human tragedy and misery by struggling to bring peace to the war-ravaged country. Syed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Thousands in Paris, tens of thousands all over France are protesting for the second time in a week against the global security law. This new law has been voted in the French parliament and makes it illegal to film and publish images of police officers. For these demonstrators, this new law is a violation of the right to inform.
We will no longer be able to film policemen in action and to put them on the social networks, which is of course very dangerous because nowadays there is a real issue in France about violence from the policemen.
Even at the very beginning of the sanitary crisis, with the total confinement, the police were controlling everybody, asking for their certificate to be able to leave their residence, you know, even though it could eventually be defendable from a sanitary point of view. Now it has nothing to do with that. This proposed law is not directly connected to the sanitary crisis at all, and they are just giving more powers to the police.
Earlier this week, the police used tear gas and water cannon when protesters took the street in front of the French parliament. With the new law, it will become illegal to film this kind of police intervention. During the Yellow Vest movement, videos have been used in judicial investigation concerning police violence. With this law, the French state can more easily hide illegal actions committed by police officers. It can also more easily hide scandals, which opens the door for abuse of power.
For us, this law doesn't only concern journalists. During the Yellow Vest movement, we have seen an explosion of police violence. One of the important arms to fight against this is the ability to film the police violence and to denounce it. So this law is also against us, not only against journalists. There is also a surveillance of demonstrators by drones.
The French government says they want a better protection for their police force. But the new French law is seriously criticized by the Human Rights Council of the United Nations, as well as by a large spectrum of the French civil society, journalist associations, trade unions, political parties, and human rights defenders. 1 year of prison and 45,000 euros of penalties, that's what someone risks for publishing the face of a police officer. Many people here say that the French government is using the coronavirus crisis to limit personal and public liberties. Chris Den Hond, Paris.
The U.S. presidential election remains unresolved, but what seems crystal clear is that the nation is more divided at any time than since the 1960s, or perhaps even the 1860s. A new poll found that nearly 80% of America says they are deeply divided on its most foundational values. Whoever is inaugurated in January will face a deeply mistrustful and disbelieving public, as the poll also finds that just 30% of Americans believe the country will grow more united in 2021. For a nation which is the richest in the world and which faces no serious external threat, such levels of disharmony are shocking even to many Americans themselves.
The far right, that's really come from almost like Trumpism, if that movement still stays strong, we can see more conflict in the next 4 years. And I think it's really just dependent on how Joe Biden kind of handles the next 4 years. And also what kind of information is really getting flown out of the far right, and whether that gets filtered or not, or whether that gets spread very rapidly.
Distrust is not something which grows overnight. Many attribute the division to the American liberals' obsession with so-called identity politics, which divides and redivides people into smaller and smaller tribes based on gender, race, ethnicity, urban-rural, coastal-inland, and on and on. U.S. conservatives are criticized for having a limited view of unity due to an us-versus-them mentality, which leaves little room for change or modernization.
I think that Republicans and Democrats have become almost like their own tribes, where they're not willing to give an inch to the other. I hope that's not going to continue, and I hope that the rhetoric becomes less incendiary as we move forward. But I don't think that Trump is doing anything but fomenting more discontent among groups of people that are already tribalized and having a hard time getting together.
The United States is proving unable to resolve a host of enormous problems. Protecting from the coronavirus pandemic, Great Depression-era levels of unemployment alongside a skyrocketing Wall Street, endemic economic inequality which has exploded in 2020, constant racial discrimination, record disharmony between genders, a Congress which is half as popular as an often deeply unpopular president, and, of course, a disputed election, the third in six tries. The poll makes it clear that belief in the nation's division is not a partisan issue, as Democrats, Republicans, and Independents all agree in similar proportions. Americans can only seem to agree on one thing, that they really, deeply disagree. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Ik heb capital, Sana'a, hosted the first scientific conference on cancerous diseases with a focus on gynecological cancers, attended by a large number of specialized doctors and academics under the sponsorship of the Yemeni Health Ministry.
We thought about enhancing the role of person, individual roles, community, families, communities, to be like sharing us our concern about their health by educating them, by raising awareness about the signs and symptoms of cancers.
Since 2015, the number of cancer cases in Yemen has increased rapidly. According to the Undersecretary of the Health Ministry, Ali Jahaf, he says this is due to the prohibited arms used by the U.S.-Saudi coalition over the past years.
That they have used forbidden armaments in bombing Yemen.
Yemeni army says it has discovered large quantities of U.S.-built munitions at the positions of Saudi mercenaries while conducting clean-up operations in the provinces of Marib and Al-Bayda. Saudi Arabia and a number of its regional allies launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015 in order to bring for Riyadh friendly President Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi back to power. Riyadh is the largest buyer of American-made weaponry. Trump signed an arms deal worth $110 billion with Saudi Arabia in May 2017. The Saudi military aggression against Yemen, coupled with a naval blockade, has killed hundreds of thousands of people and plunged Yemen into what UN says the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Military camps have been set up to help overwhelmed reception facilities, but local authorities say the government is not doing enough. The island's president, Antonio Morales, has denounced what he calls the Ministry of Interior's continued contempt for migrants and the island, demanding the resignation of those responsible. Driven by economic hardship, around 17,000 migrants have arrived on the Canary Islands this year. According to Spain's Interior Ministry, that's a 1,000% increase from 2019. In 2019, 1,885 migrants drowned in the Mediterranean Sea, and 2020's death toll is fast approaching 1,000. Open Arms, the only NGO permitted to carry out search and rescue missions at present, wrote on Twitter, "Despite the enormous commitment of our medical team, a six-month-old baby has just died. We requested an urgent evacuation for him and other people in serious conditions, but he didn't make it. How much pain and sorrow." The International Criminal Court has sued the European Union, saying member states should be prosecuted for the deaths of thousands of migrants who have drowned in the Mediterranean. In its 245-page document, the ICC says the EU's deterrence-based migration policy, which came into force after 2014, sacrifices the lives of migrants in distress at sea to dissuade others from seeking a safe haven in Europe. Bianca Rahimi, London.
As the G20 summit is about to kick off in Saudi Arabia, Amnesty International is calling on the attendees of the meeting to take the kingdom to task for its appalling human rights record. The Crown had planned to promote its contentious reform agenda to the world and show Saudi Arabia is open for business. However, Riyadh summit will be solely held in the form of a virtual meeting due to the coronavirus restrictions. Amnesty International is urging G20 leaders to join the call for the immediate release of a number of jailed women's rights activists arrested in 2018.
What we said on the eve of the G20 is that Saudi Arabia's real change makers, the activists who spearheaded campaigns for women's rights, are in jail or facing trial. Riyadh is an inappropriate host.
Since assuming the G20 presidency in December last year, Riyadh has publicized new initiatives on women's employment opportunities, claiming